and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 369.
Hello, everybody. Oh, man. It's a special number. 369, multiples of three. We're doing this thing. Super excited to be here, everybody. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
This week on the show, we're going to talk about, what do we call these games? Sandwich games? Slider games.
Yes, that's an excellent name. Ultra-fast games.
Mm-hmm. These are going to be games that you can play in like less than 10, 20 minutes.
Bite-sized games.
Bite-sized. Tasty, tasty. I wish I had something bite-sized right now. Anyway. All right. It is episode 369. I have a fact about our number. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So ready. Okay. Anytime I can find a fact related to Nikola Tesla, I'm going to read it. And this one is about Nikola Tesla. Tesla is known for his groundbreaking work in the field of electrical engineering and his contributions to the development of the modern world. One area of Tesla's research that is often overlooked, however, is his fascination with the significance of numbers. Tesla was particularly intrigued by the number 3, 6, and 9, which he believed held the key to unlocking the secrets of the universe. According to Tesla, these numbers formed the fundamental building blocks of the universe and had a profound impact on everything from energy and frequency to the structure of matter itself. Tesla's theory of 369 is based on the concept of reducing any number to a single digit by adding together its individual digits.
Okay, yep, yep.
For example, 369 reduces to 9, 3 plus 6 plus 9 is 18, 1 plus 8 is 9. Tesla believed that 3, 6, and 9 were the most important digits in this system and that all other numbers could be understood in relation to these three. One of the most fascinating aspects of Tesla's theory of 369 is its relationship to energy and frequency. According to Tesla, 3, 6, and 9 are the only numbers that can exist as energy without losing their identity. This concept is supported by modern physics, which recognizes the importance of these numbers in the study of atomic and subatomic particles. Etc. It keeps going on and on and on. There's all sorts of weird stuff. It gets into like religious belief systems and some other stuff, but pretty cool stuff about the numbers 3, 6, and 9. And when you shove them all together, you get 369, which is, of course, the episode number.
Fair enough. Yeah, 3, 6, and 9 have interesting relationships with each other that you don't see with a lot of other numbers. So that's cool.
Yep. All right. And we also have a message from our sponsor.
It is just about tax time, at least in the U.S. Did you know that most people either pay down debt, pay for mid-sized goals, or save their tax refunds? Many financial experts will tell you not to get a refund because you're giving Uncle Sam an interest-free loan. But First Move Financial disagrees. If you're more likely to use your refund to save or pay down debt than if you got an extra $50 a month, why not let Uncle Sam have it for a few months so then you get it all at once and make better choices? You and I have done this in the past, and it works well for us. If you want to talk to First Move Financial about other habits that you can build to take that next step towards your goals, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and schedule a call.
All right. Thanks so much to the team at First Move Financial for sponsoring another episode of the show.
All right. Well, before we talk about, you know, ultra bite-sized games, let's talk about the games we've been playing.
Well, one of those games is an ultra bite-sized game.
More than one.
Or at least one. And the first one I want to talk about is a game that I think I've actually mentioned on the show, but we actually got a copy in the mail from Lucky Duck Games, and this is the game Kiriai the Duel. So this is a samurai back-and-forth sparring, like, combat game, I guess. It's a duel, right? It's a duel. So, you know, you have a hand of like five cards and they allow you to do things like move forward, move backwards, change stance. There's the heavenly stance and the earth stance. Is that what the other
something
stance
like that? Yeah.
And so some of your strike cards only work if you're in heavenly or if you're in the earth stance or whatever. But it's a really interesting kind of sort of deduction-y kind of thing. It's got sort of the elements of rock, paper, scissors in it in some ways. There isn't always that, you know, that something defeats something loop or anything like that. But there's always this kind of thing where you're trying to guess what your opponent might be doing. The way the cards work, you play out basically two actions at a time. And the second action is, you know, you won't be able to do that in the next round. So your opponent is going to know one of the cards that you can't use, which is a little bit of tactical information. But I'm really curious. I mean, I've talked about this game on the show before. I'm really curious, Anitra, what you think.
I think it's really interesting because unlike some of the other small dueling games we've talked about, Pocket Paragons and stuff like that, you have extremely limited cards in Kyriai.
Mm.
I think you have basically five options. You have four cards and one of them does two different things. And some of those options aren't going to work, or you'll have to do other things to set them up. So a lot of the times you're looking at the cards in your hand, and in addition to saying, okay, what are the moves I can do right now? You're also trying to think about what your opponent is going to do, and would it benefit me to play this first thing as kind of a bluff in case they do this other thing and then play this other card after it? There's way more strategy than I expected for a game where you're only holding four or five cards in your hand. That said, you love the graphic design and the way this looks. And I think it looks really nice, but there's something about the way it's been illustrated with all of these Japanese characters and stuff on it that every single card I find myself looking at over and over again and saying, wait, what does this do? Wait, how does this work? Wait, what does this do? I don't know what it is about them. Every card will show something with the positioning of the two samurai cards, and something about the way they're illustrating that just doesn't work right for my head.
Is it possible that this is the way the game bounced off of you today and it might be different tomorrow kind of thing? Or do you think this is just kind of the way you feel about it?
I like the game. I'm having problems with the graphic design, and I don't think it's just the way I bounced off it today.
Okay.
And I don't even think the graphic design is bad. I just, my brain feels broken when I try to look at it.
Okay. All right. I mean, it is very stylized for sure, right?
Yeah.
For me, I think they did a really good job of showing these different moves in a very minimalist way.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just too minimalist for you. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. So. Anyway, that is Kyriai the Duel from Lucky Duck Games. That's going to be a snap review in the next, I don't know, month or two. What about you, Anitra?
Well, you and I tried some Sherlock Solitaire together.
We did.
Probably saw on our Instagram and stuff.
I really liked it a lot. I want to play the harder ones. I mean, I definitely feel like this theme is super pasted on.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it totally is.
I mean, it is, but it provides an interesting framework for the idea that really, there's two kinds of cards that you're pulling from a deck, and then you have to play in two different locations.
Mm-hmm.
And one location feels very much like your typical card solitaire. You are alternating suits, basically, and putting different letters and numbers and stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
And the other area, you're making pairs. But some pairs do stuff that is hopefully good, and other pairs hurt you. So you've got this idea that one kind of cards is useful all of the time, and you want to plan out using it properly to fulfill your goals, but it's what you need. It's the numbers. So you need to alternate numbers and letters on the, you know, typical solitaire side. I think that's called the office. And then you make pairs of either numbers or letters on the other side, which I forget what that's called right now.
The crime scene. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. But the numbers are your goal on the office. You're trying to make a set of, you know, three or four or whatever of the same number with letters in between them. And the numbers, when you pair them up in the crime scene, have special powers depending on which of the two characters you're playing as, Watson or Holmes. The other cards, the letter cards, are called threats. And the threat cards are necessary on that solitaire side. You have to put different letters in between each number in your set. But making pairs of letters on the crime scene side gives you a wound. And when you hit a certain number of wounds, you lose the game. So it's this balance all the time of you need to use those threats to open up the spaces to play more numbers. And you'd like to play the threats over there, but sometimes it's just not going to work out. So it's this careful juggling all the time. And the two characters have powers that are very similar, but do different things in moving cards from crime scene to office or office to crime scene, or let you pull something out of the discard pile, all that kind of stuff. It's really cool. I went back and played it once as a true solitaire game a day or two later. And yeah, I'm looking forward to playing a bunch more of this.
Yeah, it's really good. So, and that is available on, I think it's an Amazon exclusive. I think that's what I
believe so, yes.
And it's $10. So you really can't beat, you know, a price like that.
Yeah.
We played Time's Up Family Edition. This is a game from R&R Games. This game is a lot like the game Celebrity, if you've ever played Celebrity.
Which we talked about forever ago now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a while ago. So in this game, there's a stack of cards, and there's basically two teams. We went boys versus girls, because there's two of you and three of us, but two boys are younger. And basically, you just take turns giving clues. In the first round, your clues can be basically anything.
As long as you don't say the word.
As long as you don't say the word. You can use pantomime. You can kind of... you can't say, like, rhymes with blah. You know what I mean? You can't do that. But
you're not allowed to sing.
Yeah.
But
you can do basically anything else. So the teams go back and forth. So there's like a 30-second timer, and you get as many of these as you can in 30 seconds, and then you hand off the deck to the other team. They go through the whole thing. You keep going back and forth, tallying up your points until you run out of the deck. Then you shovel them all up, and then you go through them again. So you have already seen the whatever 40 words. Everybody has seen them or knows them or whatever. The next time through, you can only give one word as a clue. And you can pantomime all you want to, but you can only give one word. I think at this point you can pass.
Yes, at this point you start being allowed to pass. But also, your team now only gets one guess per word.
Right. So that's how the clue giving changes for the second round. And you do it exactly the same way between the two teams. You work through the whole deck, tallying up your points, etc. And then in the third round, it's just like round two, but you can't even speak anything. It is literally just like motions, like just
and sound
pantomime.
Effects. You're allowed to do sound effects.
Yeah, but you can't be like...
But no
horn.
Words.
Right. You know, you can't do stuff like that. So tally up all those points, and then whoever has the most points at the end wins. This game, I didn't know how much the kids would appreciate this or like this or whatever.
We were slow getting into it.
Yeah, man, it was hilarious by the end.
Yes.
There were certain things that became memeable clues. I guess that's the easiest way for me to put it.
Yeah.
Anitra as a sunflower. If you ever see Anitra at a convention, ask her to do her sunflower impression. It was very cute. But we had a lot of fun with this. I mean, Time's Up as a game has been around for a really long time. Celebrity as a game has been around for a really long
Even
time.
Longer.
I don't think this is something that is, you know, going to blow anybody's mind. But this is the family edition. It worked super well. It's got, you know, some nice whiteboard markers and stuff that are kind of built into the case, so you don't need pen and pencil or anything like that. There's a ton of cards. We didn't even open all the packages of cards.
Oh, no, yeah.
A lot of replayability. This, I don't know what the game costs. It can't be more than $25. But, so that's Time Up Family Edition from R&R Games. It is actually a new release. There's so many different Time Up games that it might be, you know, harder to kind of nail this one down. But it is a new edition that is new in 2024.
Or at least a new version of the family edition, because I did see a family edition out there. Yeah. I will say the advantage to playing this over Celebrity or your typical Time's Up is that it really is geared to be stuff that kids will know. An issue we had playing Celebrity with all adults is that if you pick a celebrity that somebody in the group doesn't know, like, yes, that can be funny and become a memeable thing of like, hey, this person doesn't know it. Does everybody remember who that is? But it doesn't feel good to have something where you're just like, I have no idea. Especially in the round when you're not allowed to pass. It's not good.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't do that. Even some of the sillier branded stuff like SpongeBob SquarePants was in there. That's something that kids are at least mildly familiar with, right?
You know, I'm going to come out and say, like, I've literally never watched the show. I know nothing about it.
I know the theme song.
I don't even know the theme song.
That's all I know.
I don't know how it is that SpongeBob SquarePants just kind of, like, avoided it for me. Or not avoided it for me, but, like, I just, It just never clicked. It was just like the perfectly wrong time in my life. Ah, so weird.
Yeah. Anyway. You also got me to play some La Familia Hort.
Well, I mean, you said you wanted to play it.
Well, yeah, because I did.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't mind. It's a good game, but you destroyed me at La Familia Hort.
Some of that was the luck of the tiles that came out, I think. But this is a really cool game. A little bit of disclosure here to all of you. Because we're good friends with Mark at Grand Gamers Guild, Andrew and I will not review his games anymore because it feels like a conflict of interest. However, we have other writers at the Family Gamers, so
this is true.
Nick will be reviewing La Familia Hort, and I really wanted to get a chance to play it before we sent it off to him. So that's why we played it when we did. I really liked it. I'm probably going to seek this one out again. I'm not big on this kind of creepy Tim Burton-esque vibe, but it works in this game.
Mm-hmm.
If you do like that kind of thing, and ever thought to yourself, like, what if the Addams Family were farmers? That's kind of what this game is. I really enjoyed it. You're putting things in your field to grow them for money and for experience points. And every once in a while, your, I guess, ghost of your dead grandma comes by. And when she does, she also brings with her some more unusual things you can put in your garden, like what looks like man-eating plants and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you say Tim Burton. I mean, and I guess it is Tim Burton, but like, it really makes me think Beetlejuice. Like, it's
Tim Burton. Yeah.
No, I know, but I mean, as opposed to some of his other stuff, you know what I mean?
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, but it's whatever. Anyway, yeah, it definitely strikes that chord for sure.
Yeah, but it's just, you're playing over a couple of rounds. You don't know how many because it's the third time that grandma shows up, you finish the round, and then the game is over. So it's got a lot of interesting pieces to it, but none of your decisions are that hard to make. Kind of like every decision you make shapes the direction you're going, and it's not overwhelming, in my opinion.
All right. I think that's probably enough for now. I think there's been a little bit more, but I think we'll hold off on talking about more of this stuff because it is the first podcast of the month of April, which means that for the month of March, we have to do our monthly report.
Oh, I'm going to be so sad on this one.
You know, Anitra, you might not need to be quite so sad if you compare it to mine.
You got in some really good gaming at the beginning of the month.
Yeah, and it absolutely plummeted. So my March of 2024, 25 plays of 16 unique games. So almost a play a day, not quite. Of that, 3 of these plays were unpublished prototype, which is not actually the same thing. I'm sure it was 3 different prototypes. I don't really know what they were. 3 plays of Doomlings, 3 plays of Tin Spin. So my H index was 3.
Okay. Well, you're right. I do still edge you out on number of plays.
I'm shocked.
I managed 29, but also 16 unique games.
Mm-hmm.
And my H index is only 2.
Wow.
That said, I have 5 games I played at least 2 times.
So you mentioned that I played a lot of games at the beginning of the month. 44% of the games that I played in March, I played at the Gamma Expo.
Wow.
Which, if you're doing math at home, means like 11 of the 25 games I played in the first week of the month. So, yeah, it was very depressing after that, for sure.
So I'm going to mention my most played games in this are Sky Rockets, which we'll be reviewing real soon, and definitely fits in that ultra-fast game. I played it 9 times in the month. And Explosion in the Laboratory, which I'm also working on a review for.
Yeah, I already mentioned mine. Let's see what else is fun and fascinating about this. My my games, 40% at 2 players. Wow, 8% of my games at 5 players. That's actually pretty uncommon for me.
Well, we played a couple of party games as a family.
Family games, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Shockingly, my highest percentages of games played were on Sundays and Thursdays.
I'm going to say that Gamma Expo probably has something to do with that, too. But shockingly, my highest day is also Thursday by a fair margin.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's just like a Thursday in there where I actually managed to play more than one game.
So sad, so sad.
Oh.
All right. Well, this weekend, we're going to be traveling out and hanging out with some friends all weekend long, so hopefully we'll get some good gaming in.
We will get gameplays.
All right.
It'll be good. And before we take a break with our snap review, let's say hi to the newest members of the Family Gamers Facebook community.
Sure, let's do it. I'll get us started by saying hello to Bump Olson.
Hello to Art.
Hello to Cherry.
Hello to Unka.
Hello to Sandra.
And hello to David.
Hello, everybody. 796 members strong. Family Gamers community on Facebook is an awesome place to go to find out a little bit more about maybe some people who share some interests with you. Find out what kinds of games people are playing with their family. We've got some folks that are even sharing kind of their video reviews of some of the stuff in their collections, which is totally cool. As long as people are contributing, you're welcome to share whatever you want. I mean, I guess not ads. But anyway, head over to the Family Gamers community. You can get there by going to thefamilygamers.com/community or by searching for the Family Gamers community on Facebook. Say hello to all of our newest friends and see a super cute cat. All right. And with that, Nature and I are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about slider games. We'll be right back. Ugh, I hate being stuck in traffic.
You know what's worse than a traffic jam on the highway? A traffic jam in a parking lot. No one has space to move, and you're not all going in the same direction. It's annoying even though I'm in the backseat.
You may be right about that, but it does make a great basis for a puzzle.
This is a snap review for Rush Hour.
Rush Hour is a solo puzzle game that was first created by a Japanese puzzle inventor in the 1970s. This version is done by ThinkFun. They say it's for ages 8 and up, and it comes with 40 challenges ranging from beginner to expert. So Elliot, let's talk about the art in Rush Hour. What does it look like?
It basically just looks like different colored 70s cars and trucks.
They are pretty colorful, and there are a lot of them.
I think there's enough to cover every square on the board.
There are, in fact, and they click into place, but they are easy to slide forward and backwards. I also really like this sliding drawer that holds all the puzzle cards, and the bag that holds everything. It means this is really easy to pack, and even to play, while traveling. For anyone who hasn't tried it before, Elliot and I are going to explain the mechanics of how Rush Hour works.
Set up the gray parking lot with cars and trucks as shown on the puzzle card. Your goal is to get the red car out of the exit.
To do that, you'll have to move the other vehicles bit by bit, and it won't always be a straightforward, clear path.
Especially on the harder puzzles. And you can't lift or turn them either.
So you keep sliding vehicles back and forth until you get the red car out, and then you win.
Yay! If you get stuck, the back of each card has a solution of what to move and in what order.
Like we said, there are 40 puzzle cards that get progressively more difficult. So Elliot, what did you expect from this game?
I mean, I expected a solo game. I thought you would need to move stuff to make a pattern, basically.
Mom and Dad both enjoyed these puzzles when we first saw them in our teens. We figured you guys were going to like them, too. The way the puzzles are set up, you can usually tell you're making progress even when you're not entirely sure what you're going to do next. And it is easy to backtrack or even to reset the puzzle, even though it can get frustrating sometimes.
I expected it to be less hard.
Well, that brings us to our surprises. Elliot, what surprised you about this game?
I tried to play it fast, and then it ended up like Donkey Kong.
What do you mean, Donkey Kong?
I mean, like, you have to use a big chunk of your brain to figure out the puzzle.
And you use your brain in Donkey Kong?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean, you're solving puzzles.
I was surprised that this game was just like I remember it from when I was a teenager. The industrial design in this game hasn't really changed much at all, and that's a good thing. The cards and the cars pretty much work exactly the way I expected them to. I do think the plastic might be a little bit thinner, but other than that, it's pretty much exactly the same. I also think it's a little bit louder, but maybe that's just my dad ears.
I think so.
So, Elliot, do you like Rush Hour?
Yes, I like it. It's a solo game, so you don't have to worry about anyone else beating you.
I think we'd recommend this for kids and adults who like puzzles. It doesn't take very long to set up, and you can play it just about anywhere when you have a few minutes.
I don't think some of my friends would like it. They don't have the patience to figure it out, but you might.
And you can actually play this cooperatively as well.
It's true.
Elliot, what are we going to rate Rush Hour?
I think we're going to rate Rush Hour 5 parking spaces out of 5.
And that's Rush Hour in a snap.
And we're back.
Hello, hello, hello.
So, real confessions here. The topic for this podcast came from the fact that we have not had time to play games very much lately, as you kind of heard in our March report. And so, for me at least, the games that have been getting played are ones that I can fit into, like, less than 10 minutes, like 5 minutes most of the time, where I can grab a kid or even sit down solo and just be like, come on, let's play one round just so we have something, some point of connection in the day.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly what it is, right? I mean, that's what we want board games to be, are opportunities to connect with, you know, our friends, our family, whomever. But sometimes you can't sit down for 90 minutes to connect deeply over a rousing game of Ticket to Ride or something like that. So it's these quick, short ones that are really helpful for this kind of thing. Sometimes filler games, even fillers, are just a little bit too long. They're coming up around a half an hour, and you really need something that you can just scream through. And so we figured we'd talk about half a dozen of these.
Yeah.
All right. You want to get us started?
Sure. I figured I would talk a little bit first about what makes this kind of game. I mean, because, like, yes, we said these are not even filler games because they're super short. So obviously, they're going to have little to no setup and little to no cleanup, very importantly. Some of these are actual timed games, and that's what keeps them short. And some of them are just, there's just not a ton there that you're doing in, you know, a round of the game. Normally, these are games you might play 5 or 6 times in a row. But lately, we've been like, okay, if we can do it once and then go back to doing homework and activities and dinner and all of the things. So, yeah, that's where we're coming from on this.
All right. Sounds good.
So it probably will not surprise people that my first one for this is going to be Skyrockets. I have been playing a ton of this with Asher in preparation to review it. Skyrockets is a game with a bunch of timers. I don't think we've played a game that was longer than about 8 minutes. Most of the time they're shorter, but it depends on what the scenario is and what the setup is. They are short enough that usually if we lose, we immediately turn around and do the scenario a second time. And even then, we're talking playing twice is less than 15 minutes. So I've talked about it a little bit before. I'm not going to belabor the point. It's a game where you're flipping timers based on the cards you put out. You don't want the timers to run out, and you do want to be able to flip the sort of the countdown timer all the way to the end of the track, and then you win the game. It's more forgiving than a lot of the other timer-based games that we've played because you have a couple of little tokens that you can flip over to restart a timer that you forgot about. And having all of these scenarios means it doesn't just feel like the same thing every time. There's lots of different strategies based on what the scenario is asking you to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think you pretty much covered it. And again, you have talked about it a couple of times. My favorite thing about this game is the random distribution of timer colors on the cards. So, yeah. You know, you're looking and you're seeing the red timer's about to run out. So you have to play something that's got red on it. But the thing that has red on it also has purple on it. And the purple one you just flipped over. So you don't want to flip it over again because then it's going to be really close to running out. And so it's...
But you got
to
do something.
Yeah, it's this constant back and forth. And it really creates a super interesting tension and a lot of basically, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap for, you know, whatever, 90 seconds.
Yep.
So really love that dynamic, that tension that the distribution of colors creates is really interesting to me.
And like I said, the scenarios make it so there's lots of different ways to play the game. And this is a cooperative game, anywhere from 2 players to 5 players. You can do the same scenarios, and they're not always going to feel the same depending on how many players you have.
Hey, Anitra.
Yes.
What if you wanted to play a game in like under a minute?
I mean, I actually was just telling someone today about Panic Island.
Okay. All right.
Panic Island is a game with a 1 minute timer that is a cooperative memory game. This has the most setup of any of the games we're going to talk about. And even so, you can set up, play, and clean up in less than 5 minutes.
I love it.
Yeah. So you're setting out, I think it's a 5x5 grid of cards. And in Panic Island, all of the people around the table are taking turns to flip over one card and then another card. It's basically a memory matching game. It's slightly more complex than a memory matching game because you want to match, you have tribes and you want to match like the person with the bird. The person can rescue the bird. The bird can rescue the egg, but they have to be of the same tribe. So you're trying to get as many inhabitants off the quote unquote island before the time runs out and the volcano erupts. There's a bunch of other cards that aren't tribe cards that make you do things that slow you down and make the game harder. And that's where the real variation in the game comes from, because you don't include all of those every time. It would just be insane. So I think you have three kinds in any particular game of obstacles that you're going to run into. There's another one that when we were reviewing it, we played it a ton because it is so fast and there were so many options. And some of the suggested setups we could get really good at, and other ones we could not master no matter what we tried.
I mean, one of the things, especially in a family kind of environment, that I think is really great about a game that has such a short gameplay loop is that if you're playing with a child and someone else comes up and sees it and they say, oh, I want to try this, it's like, okay, wait 40 seconds. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
We're almost done. You can play next time.
Yeah. What do you mean you're almost done? You just started. I know. It's that good. So I really like that part of Panic Island.
And it's really nice to cooperate in a memory game. I don't see a lot of that in cooperative games that are appropriate for kids.
Well, plus we need to play cooperative memory games with our middle son because he just whoops us at everything.
I know, right? He's gotten a little worse now that he's a teenager and he has so many other things in his memory. But most memory games, if they're ones that kids really can play, like you don't have a bunch of other skills going on at the same time, they're kind of boring, honestly. And they're competitive. So it's just, oh, I made a match, I go again. Or I made a match, you didn't make a match. I made a match, you didn't make a match. The only other example of that I can think of where it's not cooperative, but it's a little bit more interesting, is Turtle Splash. But even in that one, it's mostly interesting because there are other things you're doing that's not memory. In Panic Island, all you're doing is memory with a very short timer and a bunch of obstacles in the way. All right, how about another one? This one is one of our favorite restaurant games.
Yep.
Because it plays up to 11 people, and still, at the maximum player count, you're still only looking at about 10 to 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And this game is Get the MacGuffin from Looney Labs. Get the MacGuffin it's a pretty silly game where really your goal is to be the last one that has cards. And
yes.
So every card is unique. There's no duplicates in the game. Each card does something a little bit different, like the MacGuffin, which says if you have no cards in your hand and you have the MacGuffin in front of you, pick it up and put it down, which kind of allows you to basically pass your turn, which you normally wouldn't be able to do.
Right.
Some of the cards are very silly things, like you are the parade marshal or something like
that.
Yeah,
and you just wave at everybody. That's your action.
You're the king and, you know, people have to call you sire and stuff like that, or rock, paper, and scissors are three different cards, and you know they can cause people to discard appropriately, right? There's a backup MacGuffin, and then there's a Plan C. The other, yep. If the MacGuffin itself and the backup MacGuffin are not out, the Plan C acts as the MacGuffin. So there's all sorts of different, very silly cards. Some cards will cause you to take everybody's cards, shuffle them all up, and deal them all back out again.
Or like trade cards with somebody or whatever. Yeah.
Yep. It's just silly. It's lighthearted, kind of fun. As you go around the table, you have to either play a card from your hand or discard an item that is in front of you or do the action on an item.
Yeah.
Eventually, everybody will just run out of cards because they'll all end up getting discarded until one person is left and that person is the winner.
Yep. And it's always a game where basically people are trying to steal the MacGuffin or, you know, you find out where it is and you're trying to trade it around and it keeps moving. It's really silly and fun and you can get serious with it. You can bluff, you can do all these other things, but at its core, the game is incredibly simple. It is mostly luck, and it works well with any size group from 2 to 11 people, which is ridiculous, especially for a game that plays so quickly.
And it's like a box of tarot card size cards. Like, it's not anything big. So pretty awesome.
Yeah, this is one where technically you don't even need a table to play it at, which is also awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, one that you do kind of need a table for, but is...
I think you need a table.
But is also really, really quick, is Pocket Paragons. So a more recent addition to our very fast games arsenal. You know, we reviewed it a couple of weeks ago. I am really liking this dueling game. And part of it is the sheer variety. A regular box comes with between 8 and 12 characters in it. And each one of those characters has the same symbols. Everybody has the same set of 6 symbols. But those things are going to work in slightly different ways. Some of them might not be attacks anymore. They might do other things. And it's 100% a game of getting in your opponent's head. But even with that, some characters are like super heavy attacking and some are just about getting in the other player's head or preventing them from healing or preventing them from doing the other thing that they want to do. It's really cool because it has 2 win states. One is you've just worn your opponent down and, you know, dinged their health little by little. And the other one is if you play just the right card combination at just the right time, you immediately execute and win the game. So in our experience, this is another one that plays in about 5 minutes. It can go longer if you really, really get in each other's heads. But most of the time, it's not going to be that long.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game that has similar DNA to that Kiriai game that we talked about before, with the way that you're just trying to judge what your opponent might be doing. And you do have a little bit of information about what they have in their hand based on what they've already played. So I suppose Kiriai would probably also fall into this micro game
category. It definitely would, yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Good stuff. I really like Pocket Paragons because of all the different asymmetric player powers and stuff like that. I think it makes the game really interesting.
Yeah, it does.
The next one on our list is a game that we've done a fair amount of talking about. Just a little bit. We've mentioned it not one, not two, but 3 times.
Ha, ha, ha. Mentioned it a lot more than 3 times.
Did you know that the episode number 369 is a trio of numbers that are divisible by 3? So many 3s.
Crazy.
Although 3s is a different game. Trio from Happy Camper Games. This game definitely falls into this category. At PAX East, was that only last weekend? I don't even know when it was. A little bit ago, I grabbed one of the demo tables and taught my sister and her boyfriend how to play Trio.
Fantastic.
With one of their friends. We didn't even need Jason to be there.
Of course not.
So taught them the game, and I actually offered to buy them a copy of the game because I didn't know if they were prepared to commit at that point. They deferred, but they did end up buying a copy later.
Awesome.
Great. Yeah. So taught them Trio and played a game. So including the teach, it was under 10 minutes. I don't know. We've talked about it a lot. We had a snap review of Trio a little bit ago. Great game.
Literally the only downside for Trio for me in talking about these games is you need 3 people to play. 3, 4, or 5.
Right.
And lately, getting 3 people to play a game has been incredibly hard. So things like Skyrockets, Panic Island, even Get the MacGuffin can be played with 2 people. Trio cannot.
Sure. That's fair. Yeah. Trio is a game that we're definitely going to be bringing this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be an absolute blast. Looking forward to it. All right. One more. I think technically we've already named 6 because I mentioned Kiriai, but just one more on here. This is a game that the review for this is either going to be coming out this week or next week, something like that. Very, very soon. And this is the game Tin Spin from Surprisingly Fun Games. And guess what, Anitra?
You spin things.
It's a surprisingly fun game.
It is a surprisingly fun game. So we talked about this 2 weeks ago with Ken. It is exactly what it says on the tin, which is take dice, spin them. There's a little bit of betting, but mostly it's either roll the dice or spin the dice. Again, this is very, very fast, unless people get uber competitive about it. But if you're playing it, you know, lightly for fun, it's going to be a very fast game. And my only complaint about this one as a mother is that in trying to spin dice, they often will ricochet and go off the table. This is not a good restaurant game, even though it's very compact, because these dice are going to go everywhere when you're trying to spin them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I think it's great.
And you know what, Anitra? I think in the spirit of the show, with it being about slider, you know, games, short games, I think we'll try to keep the show on the shorter end. How does that sound?
That sounds good to me.
All right. So we've talked about, I guess, seven games now. Skyrockets, Panic Island, Get the MacGuffin, Pocket Paragons, Trio, Tin Spin, and Kiri-Ai the Duel. All very short games, under 10 minutes, that you can play. I think Trio and Get the MacGuffin are the ones that work better at higher player counts. So just keep that in mind if deciding on something to pick up. We'll have links to all of these in the show notes. Hey, Anitra, where can people find our stuff on the internet? Can you help remind everyone?
Well, if you want more information about any of the games that we talked about, you should go to our website, thefamilygamers.com. From there, there are links for all of our social media and the Facebook community and the Family Tabletop community on Discord. It is all there. Everything is at Family Gamers AA on all the social media. You can also see our snap reviews on YouTube. You can see a little behind the scenes. We recently moved our snap review studio downstairs to Andrew's office, which is also where we record the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting used to that.
More changes to come, I think.
More changes to come.
Yeah.
We would love for you to tell us what your favorite slider games are, your favorite ultra-fast games when you've only got a couple of minutes, or when you want to play something and just master it by playing it over and over and over and over again. Please do seek us out and tell us. I will try to set up Facebook posts and Twitter posts and things like that that you all can respond to. But frankly, just tell us. We would love to know.
Yeah. And, you know, we're recording before the official end of March Madness, but I do want to thank everybody that has participated in the March Madness bracket.
Yes.
It has been super duper fun. And by the time you hear this, you know who won.
Yeah.
And we do not.
We don't, because we're recording from the past.
But that's how these things are anyway, right? So whether it is Sushi Go or Ticket to Ride, congratulations to one or the other of you. This has been a blast. I think this is something we might want to maybe consider doing more often. Like only in March, though.
Yeah. I'm going to say that this surprisingly was more work than the crazy punny Valentines, but it was fun.
It was an absolute blast. I think along with talking about slider games that you really, really enjoy in your family, if you would, you know, share with us maybe some kinds of bracket showdowns you would like to see, I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe we can, you know, do some bracket things. Maybe we could even have, you know, four sub-brackets, and each one of those is themed, right? And then it comes together.
Maybe,
yeah. And then the winners of those four brackets are going to, you know, be the final four. I don't really know. We're pretty much, we're open to just about anything. We're crazy.
We're playing
people.
It by ear here.
Yeah. I mean, and so are they, because they're listening. Hey-oh!
Oh!
Anyway. Anitra gave you all the ways that you get a hold of us. You can also email us. Andrew@thefamilygamers.com is me.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com is me.
Mm-hmm. Check out our Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and more at thefamilygamers.com/merch.
If you like what you're hearing, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and tell your friends. I mean, I like reviews and ratings, but really just tell your friends. We are trying to help parents and other adults play games with the kids in their lives. It looks a little different for us now than it used to, because we have teenagers, and as previously mentioned, there's not a lot of time to play games with the kids in our lives. But we love to help out, and we've got a whole wealth of 368 other podcast episodes talking about all of the things you can do to get together and game as a family.
And over 600 reviews at thefamilygamers.com.
That too. The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
All right, thanks one more time to the team at First Move for sponsoring the show. Anitra.
Yes.
It is time to go. We have done an episode. We're going to be traveling. And we're going to be playing games with lots of friends. But we'll be back soon, everybody. So until then,
play games with your kids.